Hello, is Hori around? Has Hori joined us?
Sure.
Okay, Pia has joined. Who else is on the phone?
Hi, this is Hori from Madrid.
Okay. So Hori, I guess I should leave Madrid. Okay.
Hi, this is Lucas speaking. We are also on.
Okay. Thank you, Sano.
What about this one now? Okay. San Antonio, yes. Should I start? And then I stick to this thing, right? Also this. Both, okay.
Okay, so today we are going to be recording the talk at Penn State. I think most people have joined us. This is, so to say, a two-parter. The first part is going to be given by Alex Corici today, and then it will be followed by a second part by Jose Antonio Zapata.
No, like 3 weeks ago.
In about 3 weeks. Okay, so Alex, can you start?
Thank you. Okay, so this work is in collaboration with Tatiana Bukashinek and Jose Antonio Zapata, both in Morelia. And as I was saying, this can be seen as a first part in a two seminar series. The second part by Zapata is not going to be precisely on quantum mechanics, but it will be more like the general formalism for treating and renormalization of isomorphism invariant theories. This is just, in a sense, a particular application which is of interest to quantum mechanics and the polymer representation. So, as the title says, I will talk today about the relations, different relations between the ordinary, well-known Schrödinger quantum mechanics and the polymer representation, which is now popular. So, in the second page, the motivation is that we should ask, or this is an important question, at least from the mathematical physics perspective, just to ask what the relation is between these two representations, the Schrödinger one, which is well known to be to describe systems to good accuracy, and this new representation, which has gained some interest in the mathematical physics literature and also in loop quantum cosmology. A natural question we want to ask is whether we can somehow connect these two descriptions. In particular, the polymer description is somewhat discrete, has some discreteness in it, and then we can ask whether a continuum limit exists or not. Of course, we have to make sense of what this continuum limit is, so we have to ask what is the continuum limit. And then we can start posing the questions by looking at different systems, whether this continuum limit exists or not. And then, of course, at the end of the day, we have to extract some physics from the answers we get. In particular, this work has been done with the aim of looking at loop quantum cosmology in detail. at the end of the day, I don't think I will have much to say in this seminar about loop quantum cosmology, but at least I want to transmit the main ideas behind this little program of relating these two representations. So, next page, please. Page number 3. So we'll tell you in the second part, this is a plan of the talk, how to pass from the standard Schrödinger representation we all know to the polymer one, as a particular limit. This is new in the sense that it shows how one can actually define the polymer representation by certain limits of the Schrödinger one. I will then review in detail this polymer representation, trying to pinpoint some of these particular features, in particular why it is needed, why there is some regularization involved in defining the theories in this representation, which one has to take care of. And this is precisely the question of the continuum limit, which I will explain then in a little bit more of detail. And then, if time permits, I will consider three particular examples, the simple harmonic oscillator of free particle, and some simple quantum cosmology model at the end. So page 4. Okay, so we know that from loop quantum gravity that the only way to construct diffeomorphism invariant theories, this is the lesson from last week's seminar of Abai, is that we should start with exponentiated objects like holonomies in the case of gauge theories like loop quantum gravity. Of course, there's always a price to pay. In this case, it is that the quantum theory that we get at the end becomes discontinuous. In particular, if we look, for instance, at the mechanical system with coordinates p and q, so coordinate and momenta, one of them will not be well-defined. So we have to do something. In particular, if the Hamiltonian of the theory is of this simple form with a p squared term plus a potential, we cannot just simply go and define this Hamiltonian in the resulting polymeric Hilbert space. So we have to do something. And precisely what we have to do is first go to next page, page number 5. So the best thing we can do is define a regulated operator, which is which we will see how to get. Okay, so the strategy will be to define the continuous, the ordinary operator by a finite operator which exists, and in the process we will, in general, one introduces some kind of a regulator that does not go away at the end of the day, at least in the systems we will look at. And the problem here is that we don't have diffeomorphism invariants, for instance, as happens in the Riemann regularization of loop quantum gravity. So we have to face this regulator and ask what we can do with it and how we can get rid of this. So the objective, part of the objective of this talk is to explore this issue, namely, how can we take this regulator away and arrive to the continuum limit. And then, of course, there are many questions, for instance, whether this is a generic result or this has to be considered case by case. As I say, I will focus now on the particular simple case of quantum mechanics. The more general case of field theory and quantum gravity will be treated by José Antonio Zapata later. So, next page. So, I will now start telling you how to go from the standard Schrödinger representation to the polymeric one. It's a particular limit. And here the starting point is, I will take the simplest system, which is a particle on a line. And it is convenient not to start with the operators q hat and p hat, but rather its exponentiated versions, u and v. They depend on certain parameters alpha and beta. And now the canonical commutation relations become these new relations, which involve these u and v objects. And they satisfy certain product, and these objects generate what is called the Weyl algebra by taking just finite linear combinations of the generators. Quantization in this language means finding a unitary representation of this Weyl algebra on some Hilbert space. This Hilbert space, which I call H prime, might not be precisely the Hilbert space of the Schrödinger representation as we know it, but we will see exactly what we get. Now, this is just an algebra, and as Sabai was telling us last week, one is in search for a state which is an algebraic state. That means a linear mapping from mapping from this algebra to the complex numbers. And I will tell you how it is that the ordinary Fock type representation, which gives rise to the Schrödinger representation, arises in this case. And for that, we need to introduce what is called the complex structure, which is just a linear mapping whose square is equal to minus 1. And this is a mapping on phase space. And then we can go to next page, page number 7. And in this case, all the freedom in choosing complex structures is just given by one number, which I'm calling D, for particular reasons has dimensions of length. And then it is defined by first equation in page 7, which is just, roughly speaking, sends the coordinate to the momenta, and rescaled by this number D. If we put together this complex structure together with a symplectic structure which comes naturally, we can define an inner product, which is the next equation, which is positive definite on the Hilbert space, on the phase space, sorry. And then, once we have this inner product, we can then construct the algebraic state, and from that we can represent the Hilbert space, and construct Hilbert space, the GNS Hilbert space, and represent the Weyl algebra on this Hilbert space. So functions on this Hilbert space will be functions of Q, and then the exponentiated version of the position operator, which is the U, is just going to act by multiplication, which is first the next equation, and the exponentiated version of the momentum operator is going to have two parts. The first one is a displacement on the wave function. And then that it will be multiplied by another factor. This is somewhat different from the ordinary representation we're used to, in which there is only a displacement part and there's not the prefactor. But this is what we get if we just apply GNS directly. This, as I was telling, this comes from having specified an algebraic state on the Weyl algebra, whose action is coincides precisely with the expectation value on the vacuum of the elements of the algebra in this case. So go to next page. In this case, this state, on the other hand, the vacuum expectation values for these algebra elements is given in the first equation of page number 8. And these are just Gaussian in both the parameters alpha and beta, which are in the algebra elements. And the D is all over the place. These functions belong to the space, which is a space of square integrable functions of Q, where the measure that dictates the inner product is given by the next equation in page 8. This is also a Gaussian measure. And the GNS construction tells us that the vacuum state, the cyclic state that I was talking about last week, is just the identity. And the difference between this representation and the ordinary Schrödinger one is that in this case, since the measure is non-trivial, it's probability measure, we have that both the identity function and any plane wave we can consider are in fact normalized. So this is a small misconception with the fact that it is normally said that if the polymer representation plane waves are normalized, whereas in the Schrödinger case they are not. And as we are seeing here, if we just follow the GNS, it also happens that in the Schrödinger one, plane waves are normalized. Of course, we can always go to the standard Schrödinger representation by just defining an isometric isomorphism, which I call K, and which maps from this D representation, because everything depended on this parameter D, to the standard Schrödinger one, by just multiplying any wave function by the by some Gaussian factor, and the end result is belongs now to the ordinary Schrödinger space, which are square integral functions with respect to the uniform Lebesgue measure on the real line. This means that by means of this mapping, all the D representations are unitarily equivalent, so we could have started with anyone and go switch from one to the other, or go to the case in which nothing depends on D apparently, which is the standard Schrödinger representation. Next page. The vacuum now in this in the Schrödinger representation, or the cyclic vector, is now a Gaussian function. Okay. So now, how am I going to recover? So what I just told you up to now is the standard Schrödinger representation, just in a slightly more involved description in terms of this Weyl algebra and these representations and the GNS. But then I can go to the polymer case just by taking certain limits, and the simplest limit to take is to take 1 over D to 0. And then we will see what we get. So the first thing is that the measure that gives the inner product on this space, this is second equation on page 9, when we take this limit, this tends to, or it is actually ill-defined, but it tends to go to something which is homogeneous. This is the DDQ, but there's 1 over D factor, prefactor, which somehow tells us why, explains us why any function which is like a plane wave, for instance, becomes now, its norm, it starts to grow and grow. But if we can nevertheless take, for instance, the inner product between states before taking the limit, and we can perform all kinds of operations for any finite D, and at the end of the day we can take the limit and see what we get. So if we look, for instance, at the two basic states, which I call phi sub alpha and phi sub lambda, which is in the next equation, these are plane waves, ordinary plane waves, and I take the inner product for arbitrary D, what I get is some Gaussian term at the end. This also tells me that for general D, plane waves are not only normalized, but they're not orthogonal to each other. But in the 1 over D limit going to 0, this inner product becomes precisely the Kronecker delta that we are used to in the polymer representation. So we do recover an important feature of the polymer representation. Now, also we see that these plane waves now become, in this limit, orthogonal, whereas in the Schrödinger case they were not. So now we can think of them as a basis, and in fact we do have now a uncountable number of basis states, which are these plane waves, and that's why the Hilbert space now becomes non-separable. Now we can see at what happens with the action of the other operator, namely V of beta, page 10, sorry, when acting on the basis of these plane waves, and what we get is the first equation on page 10, which we can again take the limit after having operated with this V, and what we get is precisely what we would expect, basically, something which acts by shifting the number. By shifting this. This is. No, this is just a this is just multiplied by a factor. Yeah, this is an eigenfunction exactly. So we see that this action, for instance, is continuous in beta because we can just take the limit when this goes to zero. So we can define the generator of this of the V of beta, which is just one, the derivative operator in the last case. And then we see that this operator P hat operator has in this limit these plane waves are now eigenstates of the operator, and we will recover what we expect. plane waves in the general Schrödinger representation with the D are not eigenstates of the momentum operator. It's just in the limit that they become eigenstates. Next page. Okay, so if there are any questions about this part, because now I will recall exactly what the properties of the polymer representation is. So what I did just to summarize up to now is that I started with the Schrödinger representation in this vile algebra language, and by taking some limit, I recovered the polymer representation. I took the limit 1 over d going to 0. I could have taken also the limit d going to 0, and I would get something which is like the other polarization, the other way of looking at the polymer representation. And just for, since I don't have too much time, I didn't describe that. But what we see is that we can get the polymer representation, at least its kinematical structure, just by starting with any of these Schrödinger representations and then taking the limit at the end of the day. Okay, so if there are no questions about this, I will go ahead. And then I will just remind you what the abstract polymer representation is, so the kinematical part. This is the one we would obtain in this limit. And then in this abstract formulation, we have our kets, which are labeled by real numbers. I mean, page 11. Any state is just a final linear combination of these kets. The kets are normalized. This is equation 4. And they are normalized with the Kronecker delta, as we saw before. These kets were precisely the plane waves I was looking at. And then we can define the generic inner product between two states of this type in page 12, which is just the first equation there, which is just the sum over the coefficients in the expansion. There are two operators, basic operators on this Hilbert space, which is non-separable just because this basis has an uncountable number of states. And the two basic operators I will call the label operator, which is the second equation on page 12. This label operator acting on the ket just brings out the label inside the ket. And there's a displacement operator, which I call S, and depends on a real parameter lambda, which just shifts the label of the ket. These operators are the epsilon operator, the label operator is symmetric, and the shift operator is unitary, but is discontinuous. It's discontinuous precisely because the action of shifting the label in any of these kets always brings us to a state which is orthogonal, so we cannot define the generator of the shift operator by taking the limit when lambda goes to 0, for instance. So there is, even when the shift operator is well-defined for any value of lambda, it doesn't have a generator, and that's why this is discontinuous. There's no, there's not the, it doesn't exist the corresponding operator. Okay, so next page, page 13. That was the basic kinematical setting for this polymer representation. But now let me go to the dynamics. So now we have the simplest system, which is just a particle and a potential V of Q with the Hamiltonian, the standard one. And then just by staring at this equation, we see that we're in trouble because the representation, this polymer one, can either represent Q or P, but not both. Then what do we do? So what we normally do, or what the people normally do, is to approximate the operator which doesn't exist by some well-defined function that can indeed be quantized, and then just hope for the best. The standard choice is to say that the operator p hat will not exist. So that means that in the Hamiltonian, the offending term, so to speak, will be the kinetic term, p squared over 2m, which has to be approximated, and then the potential will not be a problem. So what there are several ways of looking at what we do. One particular viewpoint would be to say that instead of considering the full kinematical Hilbert space, which is non-separable, we can just look at a small sector of it, which is defined by a regular graph. We could define a different approach, but let me just, for the sake of the argument, take this viewpoint. So if I choose this graph, which I call gamma, so mu 0, instead of uncountable number of points, we will have an infinite but countable number of points, which are characterized by this parameter mu naught. And this is telling us what the constant separation between these points are. So we could, for instance, consider the last expression on the question on page 13, which are just those points on the real line, which are multiple integers of integer multiples of mu naught for all integer values of n. Okay. So now what happens that instead of having arbitrary kets in page 14, please, we have just a countable number of kets that corresponds precisely to the values mu n, which belong to this graph. Then any state in this sub-Hilbert space, separable now, will be expressed by equation 5, which is the condition now. I'm now taking a possible infinite sum here with the condition that the sum of the squares of the coefficients a sub n is finite. So within this restricted Hilbert space, I can then define an operator which approximates p squared over 2m. So what we do is make use of this shift operator I was defining before, which basically takes the label of the kets and just shifts it in this case by mu naught. So if I choose, what I have to do is choose a particular value of lambda, this is the free parameter that came in the shift operator, in such a way that when I act on any of the kets on this graph, I do not get out of the graph, so to speak. So I get from one side of the graph to the next one, and that means that I have to choose a particular value of this lambda to be equal to mu naught. If I do that, then I just have this shift operator with the mu naught to work with. And from that operator, if I go to next page, I can use now the fact that the p function can be well approximated by a sign, which is written in the first equation, the right-hand side part, in terms of the shift operator. So I can then regulate the p hat and define a new p hat sub mu naught which acts in equation 6, with whenever it acts on a ket with label mu n, it just shifts the, it is a linear combination of shifted kets in as given by equation 6. And we can also regulate the operator p squared, which happens, the best choice happens to be not the square of equation 6, but a new operator, which is given by equation 7. And if we do that, then we have now a regulated operator on the Hilbert space. By the way, this, the regulated operator in equation 7 comes from the classical expression given by p squared and some proportional to 1 minus cosine of p. These approximations are valid whenever the momentum is much smaller than h bar over mu naught. So we expect that in this regime, we are in a good approximation. So what we do is define the regulated Hamiltonian by this new kinetic term, which is equation 8 on page 15. So let's go to next page. Having done that, we could now look at the resulting theory, which is having regulated this the Hamiltonian in this way. And there are two polarizations, which I will call, this just means whether I'm choosing wave functions to be functions of Q or functions of P. Normally we call that the P representation or the Q representation, but since I'm using representations for distinguishing between Schrödinger and polymeric, now I will use this, the word polarization, but this is just the standard Q or P representations. So if we now take look at the Q polarization, that means that that's the question 9 tells us, that the abstract gets labelable N will be now represented in the Q space. In this representation, the eigenstates are characteristic functions. They are functions of Q, but they are zero everywhere except at the site, at the point when Q is equal to mu sub n. This is a lattice, site of the lattice, where the wave function takes the value 1. So in this sense, when we take this linear combinations of these basic elements, which are just Kronecker deltas, what we get is a wave function which has support only on the lattice sites, gamma, mu naught. So we can, given that we can express any of these functions as a linear combination of these bases, we can think as a state as completely characterized by these Fourier coefficients, which is just these coefficients, a sub n that I defined before, given a set of values a sub n, I'm specifying the function on Q of Q. This is the standard thing. So now if we look, live in this polarization, and then we look at the Hamiltonian, what we get is a difference equation when acting on this Fourier coefficient a sub n. And this is normally what we encounter, what we see in the treatments of the polymeric representation and loop quantum cosmology and so on. In this case, solving the Schrodinger equation amounts to solving this difference equation for these coefficients. And since these coefficients are enough to specify completely the state, then once we solve this difference equation, we have solved the problem. Let me now look at a different polarization, which is just the dual picture of it. There's nothing profound about this. And for that, let me go to next transparency. This is what I call the momentum polarization. So in this case, wave functions will be functions of P. Therefore, our regulated operator P hat sub mu naught will act simply as a multiplication operator. This is given by equation 10. So this will act on wave functions of P, and we will just have this expression, this expression, which is just a trigonometric function, which is precisely what we are doing in this regularization. And now the operator Q hat will act on wave functions of P as the ordinary derivative operator as given by equation 11. Now, of course, if we choose this polarization and we have a generic potential, we will have to make sense of the operator corresponding to that one by means of the spectral theory defined now on a circle. And now the question is of why on a circle? Well, the reason is that at the moment that in which we had to restrict ourselves to a particular graph, be it for choice or being by another, the other viewpoint of just defining Hamiltonian and finding this graph, the fact that we are considering functions of P, now this P is the fact that we are living in this graph and that all the operators maintain this graph invariant, so they just jump from side points to side points for an M integer, meaning that the basic elements are just plane waves of certain integer multiples of fundamental variable. This means that what we are doing is basically we're having wave functions. So let's go to page 18. We have the Fourier modes of functions which are periodic functions in coordinate P with a period 2 pi h bar over mu naught. So then the question is, can we pretend that actually this variable is now compactified by the momentum? And the answer is yes. It's not that that we are proclaiming some new principle or something. It's just that by going to this lattice, every question we could ask in the full polymeric Hilbert space, we are just in a subset of the polymeric kinematical Hilbert space, but any question we ask is totally equivalent as if we were asking a question on a circle. So in particular, the polymeric wave function, which is the first equation in page 18, which in this case is given by the Haar measure on the Bohr compactification of the real line, which is the right-hand side of the first equation, is totally equivalent to the inner product on the circle, by just looking at periodic functions of P and taking the inner product given by the second equation. So making use of this equivalence, we will then think as if we were living on a circle. Now I should say that what we are doing is not that we are just passing from this non-separable polymeric Hilbert space and just going to a circle by choosing a particular lattice, and in fact that this lattice is not unique. I could take a slightly shifted lattice, and in fact what one normally does is decompose the polymeric non-separable Hilbert space in a tensor product of these separable Hilbert spaces. So what we have is an infinite number of theories on a circle. These different theories on a circle, they happen to be super selected, so we are looking just as one of the super selected sectors for our considerations. And this is what I will do next. So we can go to page 19. So let me just remark about this construction. I have given you a procedure of how to regularize the kinetic term for a Laplace system, and we are working now in these separable Hilbert spaces of integrable functions on S1, and then we can immediately see some possible limitations of this description. So the first one is that if the mechanical system that we are going to consider, whose quantization we are going to look at, has complete orbits for which the approximation in this case in P is valid or is a good approximation, that then we could expect that this both effective classical description, which was given by this substitution of P by sine of P, and the corresponding quantum description, which I call the polymeric quantum description, they should approximate the standard one, namely Schrödinger quantum mechanics. But it could happen that the mechanical system to be quantized is such that its orbits have always values for which the momenta is not small compared to P times h bar over mu naught, in which case the approximation we are considering will be very poor. And then we don't expect that this classical, effective classical description or its quantization will be close to the standard one. And as we will see, there are systems for which the case number one in red is satisfied, and there are systems for which what happens in case two in blue is satisfied. So then let me change gears and go to next page number 20, and start talking about the continuum limit. So if there's any questions about this part, no. Okay. So let me start talking about the continuum limit. So what we have is a dynamical theory, which has a regulator, which I call mu naught, is different from zero. And we would intuitively expect that in the limit, when this regulator goes to zero, we should recover the continuum theory. So, but we have to be careful, but we don't know exactly what this means. If we just make this number smaller and we change the quantum theory because we have different approximations and so on. But are we sure that when we just take this limit, we approximate the continuum theory? If we are in quantum mechanics and there is a Schrödinger description, we know intuitively what we expect to call the continuum theory. But there might be some other systems for which there is no such advantage. There is no continuum theory to be approximated. In particular, in loop quantum gravity, there is no such a theory. So what we want to define is to define a continuum limit, which is somewhat independent of the limit we are trying to approach, and see whether this limit exists. And then, if there is some continuum theory to compare with, we can compare at the end of the day. So the first idea to take this limit would be to say, okay, so I will take this mu naught, which is a parameter, a free parameter there. I will just make it go to the limit as this parameter goes to zero. This means that if I think in terms of the lattice, in the limiting case, I get the complete real line, which is the only equation in page 20. That would mean that any wave function is going to be now a continuous sum, given by some coefficient psi of mu, and these basis elements, which are these Kronecker deltas. In fact, we can write any function of psi of q as this continuous sum in terms of these Kronecker deltas. But the problem is that if we just define this as the continuum limit, And if we want to take this limit by living in the polymeric Hilbert space, we have a problem, and for that we have to go to page 21. The problem is that the norm of this state in the polymeric Hilbert space just is given by this continuous sum, which in general blows up. So we cannot, within the polymeric Hilbert space, take this naive continuum limit, so we have to do something clever, or more clever than that one. So the next idea, which this is part of the motivation of what we have done in terms of defining this continuum limit. So the intuitive idea is that we are going to think of this lattice in a different way. Instead of thinking of the lattice as just by considering the lattice point, we will think of this as a decomposition, which we call C sub n, of the real line, in which we are decomposing the real line by intervals of length mu sub n, which is mu naught over 2 sub n. And then we're approximating the functions now on some assumed continuum by step functions. Let me be more precise. So what we have is we can think of an embedding for each one of these scales from the polymeric Hilbert space to the Schrödinger Hilbert space by means of the second equation on page 21. So on the left-hand side, we have an expression with leaps on the polymeric Hilbert space. We have the chi's are just the basis elements. Psi are the coefficients which give us the value of the function on the lattice sides. And what we do is we just change the basis. Instead of having Kronecker deltas or functions which are supported only on the lattice points, we consider now characteristic functions on the intervals, which is the right-hand side of the equation. So these are characteristic functions which are 1 in the interval alpha sub n, which I'm specifying at the end of the transparency, and they are 0 everywhere else. Now this is an element of the Schrödinger Hilbert space, so it was rather trivial to do this. And just by doing this simple trick, then we can start comparing polymeric states with the Schrödinger or the continuum states. And then we can ask the question, what happens when we refine this lattice by taking the mu sub n decomposition of the real line, which is subdividing by 2 in each step, by subdividing each interval in 2 intervals at each step. And this is what I will now describe in more detail starting in the next page. So in page 22, there is a small graph of what we do. So we have some function we want to approximate, which is a continuous one. In the ordinary polymeric picture, we just think of the values of the function at the side of the graph. Now we are approximating instead of just bunch of points by some step function, which in the limit it is intuitively that we can hope to recover the continuous theory. Okay, so next step is of course to define to have a Hamiltonian well defined at each scale, and then define this the procedure for making this scale smaller and then going to the continuous theory. So as I was saying, the basic elements in the construction, we are page 22, will be these characteristic functions on these intervals. And by construction, this basis is orthonormal. And what we have to do for implementing this procedure is to go to the dual Hilbert space, which we call H star sub C n, with the dual basis there. And then we have to define, or we define, some coarse-graining mappings, refinement and coarse-graining mappings, which we call D, or D star, depending on whether we are going into finer or coarser direction in this renormalization. And in this case, the D star is what we call the coarse-graining map, and this is defined on the dual Hilbert spaces. And basically what we have to do is work on the dual Hilbert space and define the continuum limit by the limit of this coarse-graining mapping, which is which is page question 12 in page 23. And this is for the Hamiltonian. What we do at each scale of this decomposition is think of the Hamiltonian as a quadratic form on the Hilbert space given by the equation, which is on the fourth line of page 23, which is just the expectation value of the Hamiltonian on this on the equation on the, so to speak, polymeric wave functions at that scale. There is a renormalization factor which we call lambda square. I will talk about this a little bit more in detail later. This renormalization is needed in order to guarantee that the renormalized theory converges. So we will define states and Hamiltonian, the renormalized Hamiltonian, by considering this coarse graining map and then taking the limit when we refine these intervals to zero, to zero interval size. We have to, of course, require some compatibility between these procedures at each step, which is the next equation after 12, and we have to see whether these conditions are satisfied and then whether this limiting procedure converges or not. We have done in detail the analysis for systems. Now let's go to page 24. Systems which have a discrete and non-degenerate spectrum. That means that we have equations like the first equation, which is cut in page 13, which means that we have for each scale C sub n, we have a energy eigenvalue equation in which the energy eigenvalues we are calling E sub nu. Nu is a label for the level of the eigenfunction, and this is at each scale, and then we can represent the Hamiltonian, which is this quadratic form as given by equation 13, which is just a sum over the eigenvalues with this dual and with this tensor product equation. And these eigencovectors, this is the solutions of this equation in the dual of Hilbert space. They have to be rescaled by a certain number. In this case, we take 1 over lambda squared to make this consistency conditions be satisfied. And for technical reasons, we have to consider a cutoff, which at the end of the day, we get rid of this cutoff, and so we do recover the complete case. So if So what are we going to ask? We're going to ask that there's some convergence of the energy levels, which is equation 14. This means that if we have at each scale solutions to the energy eigenvalue equations, we should expect that in the limit, when the refinement goes to zero, when we recover the R as a continuum theory, we should have for each value of nu, that means for each energy level, we should recover the energy of the continuum theory, or the other, if there is not such a continuum theory, if this limit on the left-hand side of equation 14 exists, then we are somehow defining what the corresponding totally renormalized continuum energy eigenvalue would be by the right-hand side of the equation. If there is a continuum theory to compare with, then we have to compare this value with the corresponding one. And then we have to ask that the existence of a completely renormalized eigencovectors, which is equation 15 on page 24, meaning that this coarse graining map with this mapping the wave functions at any scale, when we take the limit, this is an equation which is defined at h scale m, do we take the limit when the other one goes to, when we refine it, then we should get the totally renormalized wave function at scale c mu, which is going to be something like the shadow of the, it has to be thought of as the shadow of the continuous theory on the lattice given by scale cm. So if this is all, if equation 15 is also satisfied, then we will say that there is a continuum limit. We have to ask also that the Hamiltonian behaves nicely in this case. That is given by in page 25 by equation 16, and this is the question 16 tells us what is the condition that we have to ask for the renormalized Hamiltonian. Now it's acting on this delta Kronecker's of the polymer case, and so this is given by this particular limit. As I was telling, there's some choice in the regular in the renormalization of the inner product each scale when we want to make everything consistent, and the particular choice that works in this case when we are recovering the uniform measure is to choose lambda squared to be equal to 2 to the n. This means that the renormalized inner product for the basic covectors, which is equation 17, is just given by the delta, which is the, like the standard one in the polymeric case, divided by 2 over n. And then what happens is that this sequence, once we do this, the sequence of this compatible normalizable covectors by the coarse grating map in this star, in the limit, we get precisely the projective limit as a projective limit. And let's go to next equation, next page 26. We define the by equation 18 this totally renormalized covector limit of covector spaces by the limit given on the right hand side, and there's an inner product which is defined in this limit, which is given by next equation. This inner product happens to be degenerate, so we, in order to define the physical Hilbert, so we have to mod out by the kernel of the inner product. And at the end of the day, what we get is a is a Hilbert space, which is unitary. There's a unitary anti-isomorphism to the ordinary Hilbert space of the Schrödinger representation. So what we have shown then is that there's a proper convergence, provided that in the system the eigenvectors of the Hamiltonian and eigenvalues behave nicely, and we get precise equivalence of the continuum limit of the polymeric Hilbert of the polymeric theory to the ordinary Schrödinger representation. So the question we were asking is, can we start with the polymeric Hilbert space and in a sense recover the Schrödinger one? The answer is yes. If the system behaves well, we can recover the Schrödinger one. That means that we could take the viewpoint that the polymeric construction was somehow a distraction, or it was done because we didn't know what the Schrödinger equation was, Schrödinger theory was to begin with, and we could have started with the polymeric one and have done this renormalization procedure, obtain a continuum theory, and then discover that there's this nice continuous theory in which everything behaves nice, and then somebody goes and calls this new theory the Schrödinger quantum mechanics. So this is what we have shown in general, but for whatever system satisfies the conditions we have imposed. The simplest example that we have analyzed in detail is the simple harmonic oscillator. So let me just tell you what happens in this case. So the Hamiltonian is now in, I am in page 27. So we have a classical, well, harmonic oscillator with parameters given by the mass and the frequency. The Hamiltonian is just square, has a square term in P and Q. And then we could define the standard Schrödinger representation given by the scale D. And then we can go to the polymeric one at a given scale, which is equation 19. We are doing the same thing for the kinetic term, so we have this one minus cosine term, and we have the potential is rather simple, so we can live with this. And we can just notice, before going to the renormalization procedure, we can notice that this system, as it is, in the P polarization that I was considering before, is precisely the Hamiltonian of a pendulum, the ordinary pendulum, which I have as a first equation in page 28. And this is an ordinary pendulum with mass m, length l, and constant gravity G, where the correspondence to the original system was is given in the second equation of page 28. So we have a fake length of the pendulum, a fake gravity constant, and an angle which is related to P. We are, as before, having P as a coordinate, as a periodic coordinate. So then we can, given that we understand what happens with the harmonic oscillator, and we understand what happens with the pendulum, we can compare very easily the two quantum systems, and then we can see, understand in a sense, why it is that we do get, we do recover the harmonic oscillator in this case by considering different pendulums. And what happens is that when we refine this, what we have is the pendulum with certain potential, and when we refine the approximation of the lattice, which means that this the quantity A sub n becomes smaller and smaller, the system, well, it has a larger gravity constant, it is longer, the pendulum, and what we have is that this is a better approximation for larger and larger energies that we could consider. So we are only interested in considering, say, systems, the harmonic oscillator, for which the system is going to be in a state with less than a certain amount of energy. I can always find an A sub n sufficiently small, which means that the lattice I'm considering in this regularization is small enough, such that all these classical orbits I'm going to consider are going to be very well approximated by the corresponding classical orbits of the pendulum. And then I can expect, or I would expect it, if I quantize both systems, then in a sense I will also have a correspondence between the eigenstates of the pendulum and the eigenstates of the harmonic oscillator. And this is precisely what happens. Let me now go to page 29, because we have to now go back and recall what the conditions we were asking for a continuum limit to exist, and then we can go and ask whether this first equation in page 29 is satisfied or not, in the sense that first equation just is the eigenvalue equation. We have the eigenvalues of the energies of the, in this case, the pendulum. Mu is the label of which energy level we are in. So this is 1, 2, 3, and so on. And then the question is whether in the limit we have whether these wave functions, solutions to the eigenvalue equation, tend to the eigenfunctions of the single harmonic oscillator when n goes to infinity, and whether the energy levels also go to the energy levels of a single harmonic oscillator. And it happens that they do go to each other. And this is a very nice way of seeing this. The pendulum and the harmonic oscillator, they have very different behaviors overall. If we just look at the full phase space of the two theories, they're very different. Why? Because the harmonic oscillator only has oscillatory solutions, and these correspond to a region of the phase space of the pendulum, which is precisely the pendulum where the oscillations are small. But you can give to the pendulum a very large energy, in which case the pendulum is going to go around and around instead of oscillating. And if you give enough energy, so if the energy is very large, gravity is almost negligible. You can neglect gravity, and what you have in the limit is a free rotor. And we understand, for instance, what the behavior of the eigenfunctions of in both limits are. In the limit of small energies, where we have agreement with the harmonic oscillator, we expect to get an energy spectrum which goes linearly with n, the energy spacing. And we see, when we go and solve the pendulum, we see this behavior, and we expect that for very large mu, which means the energy level is very large, we should expect that the energy level goes to the energy levels of a free rotor, which has a spectrum which depends on mu squared, so the spacing is increasing. And in fact, we do see that behavior in the eigenfunctions of the pendulum. And what we do, or how do we think of this correspondence of the pendulum going to the harmonic oscillator? Well, the answer is that if we are going to consider now quantum systems for which we're only going to look at systems in which the energy is less than a certain quantity, then we can always consider or have a small enough lattice in such a way that all the eigenfunctions of the pendulum approximate all the eigenfunctions and all the eigenvalues of the pendulum approximate arbitrarily close to all of the eigenfunctions and eigenvalues of the harmonic oscillators within this for this energy less than the quantity we specified. So in this sense we do get convergence. Of course, there's no convergence in another sense, in the sense that there is always large enough energy for which the two systems start to behave in a very different way. But it's not the limit we are interested in. So what we have seen is that in the sense we are interested in, we do recover the continuum, the single harmonic oscillator as the continuum limit. So now let me go to some other examples in page 30. Let me just look at the free particle. Now the free particle, normally it's supposed to be easier than the harmonic oscillator, but now the difference is that now we don't have a discrete energy spectrum, but we have a continuous energy spectrum. So the equation we have to solve in this case, again in the depolarization with functions of P, is the first equation in page 30, which means that that the energy eigenvalues, there will be a different relation or different dispersion relation between energy and momentum given by the solutions of the equation, the first equation there. Again, P is compactified, so we also have a maximum value of the energy that the energy can take, which is given by 2h bar squared over m times the lattice spacing squared. Of course, the solutions to this equation are again delta distributions, just as in the Schrodinger case. The only difference is that the point at which the delta distributions have support don't satisfy the old dispersion relations, but they satisfy these new dispersion relations. But other than that, we have the same thing. We can go now knowing any wave function of P in next page, in page 31. First equation of page 31, if we have any wave function of P, we can go and find its Fourier coefficients. That would be the representation in X. And then we can look at what happens in the limit when n goes to infinity. Now the eigenvalues or the dispersion relation goes to the dispersion relation of the free particle. So we can be certain that the eigenvalues converge, fixing the value of P. And then we can see whether the conditions we have for these covectors of the theory, which we call psi sub cn, whether they converge and do what they are supposed to do when we take the limit of the renormalized case of these subjects in the this equation. And then we can see what happens. This is the previous to the last equation. And then we see that in this limit, by defining the renormalized eigenfunctions in this way, we see that they behave in the expect. We get that these are covectors, so they act on basis vectors here. We define them as the limiting case, and they do. We do recover the same behavior as in the Schrödinger case when taking this limit. So we do recover even when this is the spectrum is continuous. We can recover in a precise sense the standard Schrödinger representation, which is a good thing, because if the free particle doesn't work, then we're in trouble. So let me now go to the last example, which is of a different kind. The two previous examples, both harmonic oscillator and the free particle, we were always well, in the harmonic oscillator, we have closed orbits which are bounded in energy. In the case of the free particle, the solutions are just of a constant energy, constant momentum. So we can always refine the lattice enough in such a way that the approximation we are doing, that means going from p to 1 minus cosine of p, is a good approximation. And in a sense, we can explain the fact that we do recover the continuous limit as having to do with this fact of the classical theories, the two classical theories we are comparing. But now, when we consider quantum cosmology, and now we are in page 32 of 36, we will see that the system is going to behave in a different way, classically. So then the question becomes the question of whether the continuum limit exists or not, becomes more subtle. And I will not have much to say in this seminar about that, mainly because of time constraints. But let me tell you just what the situation is in this case. So in quantum cosmology, I will consider the homogeneous and isotropic models k equal to 1, which are given by Metrix, so first equation in page 32, coupled to a massless scalar field phi. So the phase space is given by this function A, scale factor, its momentum conjugate, the massless scalar field, and its momentum conjugate, B phi. The Hamiltonian constraint of the system is given by a second equation in page 32, which has some gravity part, which is the first term, and the second part is the matter part, so to speak, when, of course, there is a gravity part also in the second term. And we can just rewrite this equation by multiplying by A as the last equation in page 32. Now we can take this red equation in 32 as the starting point, and then, of course, when we are going to define the theory, we have the choice of deciding which of the variables is going to be well defined and which one is not. The reason I'm calling this polymer quantum cosmology and not loop quantum cosmology is because I'm using these geometrodynamical variables. There are no loops, there are no holonomies, so there is no fundamental reason for doing polymeric quantization. This is just for mathematical physics entertainment, so to speak. So in this quantization, I will make a choice, and this is nothing I'm making up. These choices have been made in the literature, and the standard choice is that P sub A is not going to be well defined. That means that we have to approximate P sub A. I'm in page 33. And this also means that the scale factor and any geometrical quantity is going to be quantized in the sense of, as we understand in the polymer description. Okay, so what we do is we're going to consider polymer description of this effect. And the first part is, so to speak, to look at its effective classical theory. This means, roughly speaking, replacing P sub A for sine lambda of P sub A over lambda. In this case, we have now an effective classical Hamiltonian constraint, which is the first equation in page 33. And this is, I have obtained this equation just by making this replacement as before. We can compute from this effective Hamiltonian constraint the effective equations of motion. If I just look at the next equation, which gives me some effective action, I just take this effective action, I compute the equations of motion, and then I fix n equal to 1 at the end. This is just equivalent of taking the time derivative defined as a Poisson bracket between the quantity f with the effective constraint. And if I do that, and I compare the system with the ordinary Wheeler-DeWitt case or the ordinary Einstein equations in this case, in the case of the Einstein equations, if we have some system for which initially A dot was negative, that means there's a contracting branch, A dot is going to remain negative always, and the universe collapses, reaching the singularity in a finite proper time. So what happens for now in this effective description, classically, what happens is that now, in this polymer quantum cosmology, I'm in page 34 now, for any value of p phi, which is the momentum of the scalar field, this uniquely fixes the trajectory in the in Einstein equations. There will always be a bounce. We just one just has to look at the trajectories defined by this effective dynamics. That means that every classical trajectory will pass from a region where the approximation in which sine of lambda is a good approximation to p is good, because I'm as initial data, for instance, and I will always go to a region where this approximation is bad. Precisely at the point where this approximation becomes bad, this is where the quantum corrections kick in, so to speak, and the universe bounces. This is classical, just by looking at the equivalent, two equivalent classical systems we had. In the previous cases, for harmonic oscillator, the two equivalent classical systems, or systems to be compared classical, were the pendulum and the harmonic oscillator. In the free particle, they are just free particles with different dispersion relations. In this case, we have very different dynamical systems. Einstein's equations tell us that the universe that starts collapsing will collapse eventually. This new dynamics given by the replacement of p by sine of lambda p will give us bouncing trajectories always. So we can then suspect that the situation is going to be very different when we consider the quantum theories. And the quantum theory in the polymer case would be considering the polymeric Wheeler-DeWitt equation, which is last equation of in page 34. And as I already ran out of time, and as I told you, the complete analysis of this case will have to be treated elsewhere, and I will probably then have a different seminar about this. So I will not tell you more than that, other than the system is going to be very different, precisely because at the classical, in the classical domain, the two, the original system, Einstein equations and this effective dynamics behave in a very different way. So let me summarize what we did here. The first observation in page 35, is that one can obtain the kinematical structure of the polymeric representation as a particular limit of the Schrödinger system. I did only the kinematical setting. A question which we are studying is whether we can actually define dynamics in the polymeric sense by a particular limit of the dynamics of the Schrödinger system. So we're not sure whether this is possible or not. The opposite question, whether how to go from the polymer description to the continuum by taking some limit, it is well, that can be defined for well-defined and well-behaved systems. Two examples of these systems are the harmonic oscillator and the free particle. And in the last part, I just pointed out that the polymer quantum cosmology has a classical behavior which is radically different from the two previous cases. The continuum limit becomes much more subtle, and as I was telling, I will report this elsewhere. So stay tuned for this. Thank you. Questions? Comments, complaints, hate mail? So the question is, we can go to the Schrödinger to the polymer as some limiting case, and the question is whether we can go the other way. So precisely the continuum limit is trying to define the way of going the other way. So this is. Well, we have a complete proof that it can be constructed explicitly for well-behaved systems. We have suspect that the class of systems for which this will exist is larger, but we don't have a complete proof.
Just Thomas is listening. He had some work on these complex incoherent states. In which I thought he did something finally similar. He managed to relate the two representations. So do you know what the relationship is?
So the question of, by Madhavan is mainly to Thomas Tiemann whether there is any relation between this and the complexifier
states. Which polymer type behavior starting from polymer states, and then there is some sort of renormalization of that.
Yeah. So I don't know if Thomas is listening, but I'm not completely aware of this relation. So. Yeah. Okay. Are there any more questions?
So I have one question. In your last slide, you write that polymer quantum cosmology has a classical behavior that's really different.
Yeah.
I'm slightly confused with it. So does it have the radical behavior at high curvature regime or even at the low curvature regime?
Okay. So for that, let me look at page 33. So here I'm not talking about the curvature or anything. I'm just noticing some trivial observation that in this by going to PA to sine lambda of PA, there is a point in which this approximation is bad. And it happens that the dynamics in this case always goes through. If you start in a point in which this approximation is good, you are doomed because you will eventually hit the region where this approximation is bad. There's a complete separation whether this corresponds to the region where we expect this to happen physically or not, and that involves a much more detailed study of not only this, what I call this polymer quantum cosmology, but looking at different ways of doing this polymerization of, and that means going to loop quantum cosmology. And so far I don't want to claim anything more here. About this.
Are there any further questions? If not, let's thank Alex again.